has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Welcome back to By the Way, the Mandalorian recap show for Unmistakably Star Wars. My name is Gina Sanders, and I'm here with Carl. Hello, Carl.
Hello, Gina. How are you today?
I am really good. So what is today? Today is Sunday, and I actually, last Wednesday, I finished my first year of grad school.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So it's been stressful, but I'm happy, and I can't wait to be done. But speaking of the other voice you hear, welcome, Eve.
Hey, good to be back.
The giggles have started already.
Always. I can't help it.
I just hear your voice and the giggles start. Okay, so today we are here to discuss episode 6, which is chapter 6, The Prisoner, directed by Rick Famuyiwa. And the story is by Christopher Yost, and the teleplay is by Christopher Yost and Rick Famuyiwa. And its original release date was December 13th, 2019 on Disney Plus. I am super excited to get into discussing this episode, but first, Carl, I believe you found an article.
Yes, it's dated the 12th, the day before the episode 6 of The Mando was released. The article is a Forbes magazine article. It basically says that they believe that the Mandalorian show is getting stale. It is getting into a formula. That the quality, as far as the way it looks, the writing, the acting, directing, they say the quality is good, but it is falling into kind of a pattern, and they liken that to if you watch a procedural show such as Law & Order SVU. My question to you guys is, do you agree with that article? And if it is getting more formulaic, does that mean it's getting stale? And if it's that way, were you going to be disappointed if it continues that way, as the author of the article suggested? I'll start with Eve. Let Eve start.
I have a lot of thoughts about this. And first and foremost is, if it continues down this formulaic procedural pattern, I don't have any problem with that. I don't think every single show ever made revolving, you know, Star Wars characters or themes or, you know, just spin-offs in any way, shape, or form has to be, you know, a Breaking Bad or a Game of Thrones, or it doesn't have to be that way. Some of my favorite shows have been procedurals. And I like sometimes, you know, I'm mid-30s now, but growing up, Smallville was one of my favorite shows. And the original Roswell. And every week, you know, especially on Smallville, they called it the Freak of the Week, because Clark Kent had this new, you know, kryptonite-powered weirdo to deal with, and then it was over by the end of the show. And then next week it was something else. And I liked the simplicity of that. I fell in love with the characters. The acting was, you know, I mean, it was, you know, it was a WB show. I love my Tom Welling, but he's not the best. I don't see a problem with that, and I think this is I think the problem inherently is expectations, especially on these, on behalf of like the writers and then, you know, the blogging sites and everything else. This is actually happening with another one of my current favorite shows right now, which is called For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus, which is fantastic. And every week I have a moment where I'm gasping or crying or both at the same time. And I found an article that almost mirrors exactly the article you just read about The Mandalorian, but about For All Mankind. And I was like, people have to stop expecting every single show to fit in this prestige box of, we need a storyline that starts from episode 1 and goes until episode 201. That in itself can get stale, in my opinion. Yeah. So if it turns out that the show moves towards more of a prestige pattern, but intros us into this world through procedurals and showing us Mandalorian's life, I am absolutely 100% great, wonderful with that.
Cool. Yeah, there's a lot of truth in what you said. Gina, do you have anything to add or any difference of opinion there?
Well, I agree. I think, so for the longest time, my favorite show was The Walking Dead. And that was before I discovered Game of Thrones. But part of the reason why I stopped watching The Walking Dead is because certain arcs and storylines, I was like, okay, I'm about ready to be done with this. I don't want to do this anymore. And so I do agree that that type of thing can get stale. One of the things that this reminded me of, though, is Star Wars Resistance. And so I do see the procedural formula in this. I never noticed it until I read this article, but it does not bother me at all. But this article did make me think of Star Wars Resistance, because every episode of that wraps up neatly with like Kaz and the Aces side quests and things, but they still have like the overarching, like the First Order is trying to find them. Tam has been separated. I guess if you've never seen Resistance, this is a spoiler, but Tam has been separated from them. Hopefully we eventually want her to be back with the Resistance. But that feels stale, very much so, because with the first season, you were just waiting for the destruction of Hosnian Prime to come. And so they kind of had to like, I know that there's this whole debate about whether something is filler or not and whatnot, but I think it's, you can honestly admit that some episodes do feel like filler, even if later we find out that they're actually super important. So there were some episodes of season one where I was like, why is this here? It feels like we're just stalling until we can get to the point where we see Hosnian Prime. And with this current season, it takes place during the Last Jedi, and I think it's supposed to butt right against the Rise of Skywalker. So it definitely feels like we can't really focus on what we really want to know of Tam and what's happening with the First Order, because we have to wait until the Rise of Skywalker comes out so that like the show doesn't spoil anything about the movie. And so when the, and I bring that up because The Mandalorian isn't beholden to some type of movie or some book or a comic or thing. It's The Mandalorian on its own. I mean, I know that we talk pretty much at the end of each episode whether anything is going to relate to Tross, but because there's nothing seemingly overt, it can do what it's want and it feels good. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's actually okay, because it's not dependent or leading up into anything like Resistance is. Because with Resistance, we're just like, we know we're just waiting for the big stuff to happen in Tross for us to get to the fun stuff in Resistance. And so I think it actually works in The Mandalorian.
Yep. Yeah, and I agree with those things. And we mentioned Game of Thrones. I think the one episode that people point to and say is filler in that last season was really a great episode, because it was, we were spending the night with our heroes. This was set up differently than the shows. There are vast characters and storylines in Game of Thrones especially, but also in Walking Dead. This is about one man and the child that he's with, and how he's protecting the child and how that child is changing him. So, you know, we are set on one, so there's not a lot of time to be... Like, this episode, I think, is the most time we've seen scenes with the Mandalorian actually not in the scene. Everything's been... He's been there for everything. But now we see what people are doing when he's not necessarily in the same room with them, even in the same ship. We're not too far away. So it's set on one person, so it's hard to have a lot of different storylines going that can kind of end in cliffhanger. So for all, the show is good, and I would say, yes, it's going formulaic to a degree, but I don't think that makes it stale or less than the prestige shows.
I also think about, so A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is the episode that you were talking about for Game of Thrones, which is one of my favorites, but I don't know if anyone else watches TV similar to me, but except for like that one and Battle of the Bastards, like a few standout episodes, I don't really watch like one Game of Thrones episode at a time. Like I either watch like a whole season or the whole or the whole series, just because it flows so well into the other one. And so I appreciate having shows where I'm like, no, I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna watch this whole thing. And then I also appreciate having shows where I'm just like, no, I can just watch one episode and then leave and go do something mm-hmm. else. And I feel like this is the type of episode where it's like, no, I could just sit down and watch one episode and then go and leave and do something else. Or I could sit down and watch the whole thing. And then the other thing I thought about was I don't really watch Clint Eastwood things, but my dad does. And so one of the things that my dad texted me after he watched an episode, he was like, it feels very... he thought they were hitting the nail on the head. It was very much Clint Eastwood Western. The point is you're supposed to drift through, encounter something, engage with that thing, and keep moving. Mm. And so I'm just like, well, it's achieving its purpose. Maybe
yeah.
people, I mean, I never like to be this person that's like millennials, but maybe with all the streaming stuff and stuff, people my age aren't used to that. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I think it fits and I think it works. So speaking of what works, we obviously think that this procedural format, it's working for us. We only have like two episodes left in the whole entire season one, so we'll see if it continues to work for us. But we should move on to the other things that we like. Speaking of, our bounty of the week. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I did that, like, and this is being recorded. Okay. my bounty of the week is that the whole second half of the episode felt like a horror movie. I absolutely loved that. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and Eve definitely knows this. Mm-hmm. I don't like horror, like, at all. Except I've become recently obsessed with like It and like the Purge franchise and things. So I'm like slowly, so good. And my dad just showed me Halloween for the first time, like the first one this Thanksgiving. And so I'm slowly like dipping my, I know, I love it. So I'm slowly dipping my toes into the genre. And so when I watched that second half, my immediate thought was like, I need to talk with Eve about this. Yeah. Like the lights, like the flashiness.
Yes.
It's a horror film. And so that's my bounty. Eve, your bounty?
I have two. Can I have two?
You can have two.
Okay. I'm going to go in order of how they happened in the show. So just like you with the horror vibes, but I titled mine The Red Light Mando and Mouse Game.
Because oh, it was, nice.
It was huge alien vibes. Just mm-hmm. his cleverness, outrunning and just outthinking everyone was fantastic. And then the second one was all about my baby. So when when Baby Yoda thought that he messed a droid up, that face gave me life. Those are my two tops.
Nice. And Carl?
Some of my favorite moments were especially when the Mandalorian had to take the first group of droids on the ship. Also, it just honorable mention goes to the fact when the guy is introduced as an Imperial sharpshooter, and he's like, well, "That's no big deal." And the guy's like, "Hey, I'm not a stormtrooper," you know. Like,
I do love Bill Burr. They brought Boston to space, and I'm here for it.
That's scary. But what if Boston, the whole city of Boston, was like our first aliens' first impression of our Earth?
I feel like it would go well because I actually really like the Boston accent. Like I said, like that's the original reason why I watched Good Will Hunting. I was like, I just want to hear a Boston accent for like an hour and some minutes. So Carl, I actually want to stick with you then. What is your Frozen and Carbonite moment?
The scene where they get to the bridge and there's a human there. When the Mandalorian says, if you cooperate with us, you know, we're just here for one mm-hmm. prisoner. You don't have to die. You can escape with your life. And Mayfeld is like, No, he can't. No, he's. It's like, well, once somebody has told me that, I'm going to start shooting. You know, so anyway, that was, you know, it gave us a little bit of information about maybe how the Mandalorian has changed some, but I just that scene was we've seen it a lot in other places. Yeah. Knew what was going to happen with Davin as soon as I got in there. So, you know, although I did like the fact that his uniform did look like what Ezra was wearing in the first episode of Resistance, that really a blue color, and then his belt and shoes did match, so that was nice too.
Did you recognize him?
I did not.
No, I haven't.
That
either.
Was Matt Lanter. He plays Anakin in the Clone Wars.
Oh, what? I still didn't recognize. That's the guy. He's in Time.
And then Eve, your Frozen and Carbonite moment or thing?
Again, I have two.
Okay.
So one, they dropped Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they dropped Baby Yoda. I immediately that night went on to. again, I'm 36 years old and I go onto Tumblr to save GIFs. But I went onto Tumblr and somebody made the GIF of Baby Yoda rolling and falling. And they were like, I'm sorry, forgive me. It just needed to be done. And I was like, I don't know if I should cry or laugh, but this is horrible. Mm. But then at the same time, you see Mando descend like the father he is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, that makes it better. That's why I will watch the GIF. But really, that was like a moment for me where I was just, they didn't do this. Because I'm getting comfortable, because I remember watching episodes, even up to three, one, two, and three, it was like a high stress moment going into The Mandalorian. Because I'm like, if they kill or hurt or steal this baby and I don't see him for an episode, it's going to be problematic for me. And I'm starting to get comfortable with the fact that Disney is the not that Game of Thrones machine. And I think that that's proof that even at the end of the show, I know I'm jumping way ahead, but Mando just throws them all into a cell when we're led to believe that he killed them. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a Disney show. Like, so I'm starting to get comfortable, but they still dropped him, and that ain't all right.
My heart like leapt into my throat. I was like, YOLO, no, I just wanted to jump to the screen. My Frozen and Carbonite moment is, so I understand that this crew isn't really like good guys. They're not even to me like the morally gray. They're just like straight up bad guys. And maybe I am getting too used to and comfortable liking my villains or who is supposed to be the bad guys. But there was just nothing likable about them at all. And I was like, how am I mean, obviously I'm sticking with this because I love it and I love The Mandalorian and I want to know what happens. But I was like, can I at least get like a joke or a funny like moment or like a quality in you that makes me like sort of kind of want to root for you guys to get this prisoner? And so maybe I am just becoming too comfortable liking the bad guys, but I was just like, there is nothing redeemable or likable about any of this crew at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think of Jian's moment with Mando in the beginning?
Okay, well, just like I have to remind myself that I am not actually like Yellow's mom or things like that, for a moment, I was just like...
You're going to be Yellow's mom eventually. We all know that, but continue.
This is true. Honestly, my first thought, I was just like, get my man's name out your mouth. I was like, who are you? What are you doing? But I take like the learning about his character arcs and development and who he was. I accept that. I love that. But I was like, who are you? And what? Why were you into this woman? So
yeah,
the territorialness came out a little bit. I mean, something. I don't know.
Yeah. I will say that while I did feel certainly hints of that, I was like, I'm intrigued.
Yes.
To see what his deal was with this woman.
Well,
I like that. I like the breadcrumbs.
I like that because I think it's just another clue about who he was versus who he is now. Because I think a lot of us would say that Omera is also a potential love interest who could come back. And so it's like, what changed that he was into this Shion character individual and the way she acts versus like this like really tough... Yep. Like, but like maternal, like they have different personalities. So I'm like, it's another thing to show that he's changed and I'm into it. Mm-hmm. All right. So now let's get into our actual episode recap.
I had rescued Yoda baby and we needed some cash. So I called up an old friend to find some place to crash. He said he'd have something for me, just come by in the Crest. And when I landed in his hangar, he told me the rest. When you work as a smuggler, getting caught is a pain. My Twi'lek's a hostage, and he's going insane. We could use Wintafombre, wearing Beskar and cape. My crew contains four. Help them with this escape. Then I hid Yoda baby so we wouldn't be seen. But those jerks somehow found him and they treated him rather mean. We get to the prison, took out droids like a boss. But when we open the cell door, I found the double cross. I'm a scary old Mando, and getting caught is a pain. When others try to stop me, it's time to Mando explain. I got a hold of a guard droid to tear up and reshape. Once I had it disarmed, I used it to help my escape. So I tangled with Big Berg, and he knocked me to the floor. Just when he thought he had me, I knocked him out with the door. Jean had her knives out, but she couldn't take me. I was a ghost to Mayfeld that he just couldn't see. Zero cornered baby Yoda, so I inflicted some pain. Their efforts to harm us had all been in vain. I dropped Quinn off at Rand's place. I left their mouths all agape. 'Cause of the tracking beacon that allowed our escape. When you run from bounty hunters, getting caught is a pain. They're after Baby Yoda, a big bad wants him slain. But I will always protect him, wearing Beskar and cape. Can we ever reach safety? Will we ever escape?
So the episode begins with Mando reaching out to his old friend Ran, and I needed...
Wait a minute. I think it's actually pronounced Ron. So...
Ron?
Oh.
And Han debate. It was a joke. It's actually Ran.
Yes. Carl.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you threw me off because, like, I didn't know what his name was when I first... I was like, I think I was doing something else, and I was like, I'm sorry, did you just say Ran? And I had to, like, go back and read closed captions, and I was like... His mama didn't name him Ran. And so when you said that, I was like, please tell me I was wrong the whole time. What's his actual name?
It's Ran. And the fact that it's just, if it's an A-N, it's a, one syllable A-N word in this universe, it must be on instead of and. So,
Can I admit what I called him the whole episode?
What?
Just the Dark Knight bad guy. That's, or Batman Begins. Batman Begins. Yeah, Batman Begins. I was like, I know that guy. And then we started quoting Batman Begins, and I was like, all right, time to rewind because I heard nothing.
A real quick tangent, Batman Begins is the only one of those trilogies that I just can't remember. I know I watched it multiple times, but I don't remember a single thing that happens in there.
Oh, it was so different to The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. It was like a completely different movie. Like tonal, like even cinematography wise, I can understand that.
But speaking of the fact that he was in Batman Begins, this also just feels like I was going through the IMDb page, and this episode just has which we'll get into some of them later, but this episode just has so many people in it that everyone was recognizing. I was like, oh my goodness, it's that episode. So he reaches out to his old friend, and Ran knows that
He knows that the Mandalorian is in some type of trouble with the guild, but he's also like, I don't ask questions. So whatever it is, mm-hmm. whatever you need, you're welcome back. And so they have a job and they're putting together a crew, which immediately reminded me of Solo and Beckett, which I feel like, I don't know, maybe a few people will like that. And then,
I'm sorry, can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
Know we might talk about this, but was that Rio Durant in the prison?
Oh my goodness, I thought so.
I think it was because of Jon Favreau.
Same, because I saw it and I was like, oh my goodness, was that? And then I kept going, maybe?
It looked older and grayer. Probably, I mean, we assume Rio was killed in Solo. I mean, he appeared to die on screen.
Oh yeah, timeline-wise.
There's lots of people that we see or think die, and it's like, oh no, they found me and they healed me or whatever, but I think he died.
No, you're fine. This is great. And so they need the Mandalorian because they need the Razor Crest. And, like, they give a bunch of different reasons why they need his ship, because, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, but they point out it's, like, old and it's falling apart and it's terrible, but they're like, it can scramble, like, these sensors or whatever, and it can avoid Imperial and New Republic things. And so I was just, because I was really asking the whole time, I was like, wait, why do you need him and his ship? So I'm glad they gave us an answer instead of us being like, no.
Yeah.
This is where he meets Mayfell, who we've talked about, is the ex-Imperial sharpshooter, but not a stormtrooper, who has a very hot temper. And one of the things I really liked, which kind of points back to one of the things that we listed as our bounty, was in the beginning, they talk about like how good he was, like the Mandalorian mm-hmm. was at what he does. And Rand was like, yeah. And he just like, he did all these things. He was super great. And the Mandalorian kind of brushes it off. And I like that they like, I feel like in all their conversation, they're like, are you as really good as you say? We've never seen a Mandalorian. And then like, we get this really cool scene where he can be like, yeah, I am as good as everyone says. Can you calm down?
Yeah. Well, that whole, I lost my Ezra is the Mandalorian vibe, because Ran is very old. I mean, he just looks very old. And so he said the phrase, that's including when the Mando used to hang with him, that's when we were young. We were all young then. I'm like, well, if you were young, I'd prefer he said the word younger. But, you know, if he was young then, that was a long time ago. And if the Mandalorian was running with him a long time ago, that would kind of interfere with Ezra being on Lothal in different places. So that's where it kind of died. But I do still feel that maybe the Mandalorian is force. Since, you know, he is a force abilities that he doesn't realize or no one's taught him how to use, and that maybe he'll actually use the force at some point in the show. So that's my other theory. Because, again, that's the red robes that we see in his flashbacks. That just, to me, speaks of people that under the force or worship the force. So we'll see.
We will see.
Interesting.
Rand doesn't really go out anymore, so Mayfeld is running point. He's like, anything that comes from him is essentially like it comes from me. We meet the rest of the crew, Berg, Zero, and Shion. And I really appreciate, I feel like, just like the crew in Solo, that this crew is so diverse of, like, people, aliens, androids. I don't know. I feel like just, because sometimes, I really appreciate when there are creatures and different droids and things, because sometimes I feel like you can get caught up with one section of the galaxy, and part of what is the appeal of the Mandalorian is that you're reminded that as cool as the Skywalkers are, the galaxy is bigger than them and their actions. And so I just like little things like that that remind us of that fact. So here, coming up next, is where they question why they need the Razor Crest, and it's because it can jam the New Republic signal, and it can get off the old Imperial and New Republic grid. And I appreciated the fact that they said that the ship was like a ghost, and because of your Ezra theory, I was just like, it could have been.
They are dropping a lot of Rebels hints in there, but then again, they're dropping a lot of Clone Wars. They're really, I think they're doing a great job of pulling from wherever you may find your Star Wars entry point or your favorite Star Wars, you're going to see something that you recognize or hear something that triggers something. So I appreciate they're doing that for everybody, not just focusing on one specific era.
Very much same. And then Zero has to fly the Razor Crest, and I still don't know why it has to be destroyed, but I'm very surprised that the Mandalorian even, like,
agrees at all. Did they give a reason why a droid has to fly?
Because of the maneuver he had to make getting into the Republic ship. They said, I don't remember verbatim what they said, but basically, like, no human pilot would be able to do it.
He's faster reflexes and more efficient and smarter to Mando when Rand said that he was going to be the pilot. And then after he walked away, Rand said, you know, he's kind of hard to take, but he's the best. So it's just like, that's his specialty. Mando is good at a lot of things, but he also said, I need you, you know, he basically needed him also to be a soldier more. So it allowed him to get out there and as Zero staying on the ship, doing all the comms and interfering with all the electronics on the ship, he's out there kicking butt, which is his forte.
I also wonder if it has anything to do with the comment Mando says at the very, very end of the show to Baby Yoda.
Oh. Yeah, because I was wondering, even after the second time, I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I was like, so many points that could allude to, but which one is it?
The crew gets on his ship, and this is when Berg asks why they need a Mandalorian. And this is, Shion, like, brings up a job that they did, and she's like, I know you liked doing this job. He's like, no, I had to do that. We don't know what he did or what the job was, but she's like, no, you liked it. She's like, I know who you really are, which made me think of The Rise of Skywalker and Rey and Kylo. And I was like, wait, we're not there yet. And it's here that they discuss why he never takes off his helmet. And Mayfeld even suggests that he's a Gungan, which I thought was funny. And I was really, I mean, I was happy that's in there because I feel like sometimes even though people are like, yeah, we like the prequels, they like never acknowledge it. And so I'm just like, anything where we acknowledge that the prequels happen, I am down for. And I will actually admit, for the first time since probably we found out that the Mandalorian was a thing, I was like, don't take off the helmet. I was like so anxious the whole time just because of like the situation. And I was like, if you guys force him to take off this helmet knowing he can't put it back on, I am going to hurt every single one. So like, I was so shocked. It was a complete like, 180 for me. I was like, no, don't take it off. Don't. And except he almost got me when Mayfeld was like, let's all see your eyes. And I was like, he almost got me because I'm sure Pedro has pretty eyes. But no, please don't take it off. So they struggle. They fight a little bit. His helmet, thankfully, stays on. You will not hear that from me probably ever again. And in all the shenanigans and kerfuffles, the crew meets Yellow. And Mayfeld is like, is it Shion in the Mandalorian's kid? Which I was just like.
And he says it so tactfully. Did y'all make that, you know? So. It was funny.
It really, really was. And then he's just like, Yellow's a pet. And I'm just like, well, sir, you've disrespected my stepson multiple times now.
But it also showed that, you know, the control Mandalorian had to have at that point because he definitely didn't like want him to know that Yolo was even on board. And then when Mayfeld actually picked Yolo up, you know that he was wanting just to snap his neck or something and get him away from him. And, but that would ruin the job and probably put Yolo in more danger if he showed that how much he cared. He had to go along with, yeah, he's just a pet, so that he didn't seem to like care so much so they couldn't use Yolo against him or hurt him even more just to make the Mandalorian upset. So it showed a lot of restraint. And, you know, I thought that was... It's another kind of layer that the Mandalorian's having to do. The problems he's facing with, he knows he's doing things he shouldn't have a kid along for, but it's the only way he can get money and stay ahead of everybody hunting him, because he's got to stay ahead of them for that. And he can't leave him anywhere with anybody else. Somebody will find him and kill him and take him back for the bounty. So he's stuck in a situation where he has no good option for taking care of Yolo, and he has to think about every situation individually, like, well, do I go in, bust in and shoot my way out of it, or do I kind of play it cool and see if they'll, you know, set him down and let this job go forward?
Spoiler alert for next week's, or I guess this week's episode, Dave Filoni called me. There will be a character introduced. Her name is Gina, and she becomes like a permanent live-in, like caretaker for Yolo.
Already stand.
Interesting. I'm gonna check the IMDb page for Gina and see
Gina.
See where else she may have her role anywhere.
Time to follow. Time to follow.
The next moment we get to is one all of us collectively gasped at, we're angry at, but especially Eve. Zero doesn't warn them about the landing. He doesn't give them a countdown. It's a very rough entry, and Yellow gets dropped, and we all collectively get mad. But they make it onto the ship. The Mandalorian claims that he doesn't like what's happening. And my immediate thought when he said something was, I've got a bad feeling about this. And Xian's like, you've always been paranoid. It doesn't matter. And when they sneak onto this New Republic prison ship, I wrote here, this is where we get our first jump scare. Because I do my notes the second time I watch. And so I was like, we're getting through the horror. Yep. And Zero stays on the ship. He guides them through the comms throughout. We also see a mouse droid. I love mouse droids, so I was like, oh, I have to mention that. Another thing that happens, so they're walking down the halls, and they are attacked by droids. And I don't remember who says it, but someone mentions that they're too exposed, and that reminded me of A New Hope after they rescue Leia. And so I'm just having all the feels, and I think it's because Tross is coming this week. And they react. They're like, where's the Mandalorian? He's supposed to be here to take them out. He's not going to do his job. I told you so. But then he comes, like, the opposite way and just, like, takes out all the droids. And I'm just, like, standing there as if I was in church and the preacher just made a really good point. And I was just like, amen, take your time. And it was a whole thing for me, which I know that I don't remember who, I'm so sorry, but one of you listed that as like a cool moment or your bounty moment. So I was not the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it. And I was in action so much that I didn't notice one of our patrons, Dave, who goes by Black Rainbow on Twitter, and actually is on Twitter hiatus, so a lot of people may not even hear this episode till after they've seen Tross, but he pointed out the Phoenix symbol that they had on the droids there, and it was also on the captain's sleeve, or the guy piloting his sleeve, which I noticed it there. I didn't notice it on the androids, or the droids, at the first time through, so it was like, it's cool for people to, you know, this was early in the morning too, so he probably got up early and watched it, and I got up early and watched it, and then, you know, he's like, did you circle Phoenix symbol? The Rebellion Phoenix symbol on the droids. Like, no, I didn't know that. So all the little details are really... Those droids looked really cool. They look tougher than the battle droids of Clone Wars. I say that much.
I don't have this maybe written in my notes. Did it happen before this, during this, or later that Zero starts to see, like, Grief's transmission and it's kind of scrambled? Has that already happened yet in the episode?
Yeah. Yeah, it happens earlier on, and then again later on when they think they've gotten away and they're about to take the ship and then deliver Yolo to the client.
So what did you guys think, and we can start with Eve, what did you think when you saw the first message, and do you think that Zero knew that Yolo was important after the other message and things, or was he just searching for whoever's on the ship?
I think the first message was by happenstance. I think he was just plugged into the system and triggering any kind of recent messages to see ultimately what sort of information he could glean from the Mandalorian. Because he knew, like, the whole team knew that they were going to sabotage him. And, you know, be double-crossing double-crossers. And I think ultimately, if you go into a bounty hunter ship, you're going to want to find out where they've been, what they're up to, what sort of jobs they might have taken, what kind of, you know, monetary gain you can ultimately thieve from this mission on top of throwing this person into a prison cell. So I think the first one was by happenstance and, like, digging around in the ship. And then the second one was, okay, we know we got him secured. Now we have this little tiny client that's worth a ton of money on top of, you know, sabotaging this person. So it was just kind of like the cherry on top, the green cherry on top. I'm sorry, my baby. But yeah, ultimately, I think it was, you know, oops. And then yes, towards the end.
Did you have similar thoughts, Carl, or anything different?
Someone was looking for other information that was just sort of something that got his attention, Zero's attention. Zero probably went through the files. We know that Finnick said something about, hey, you know, there was a lot of trouble on Navarro. Looks like you got out of there pretty well. So there's probably also other news that Zero's putting together of, okay, there was something that happened on with the Bounty Guild on Navarro, and he them being kind of scoundrels all themselves, they probably have informants about different things. So he probably put a lot of pieces together and realized that there was something, a client, a bounty that he was supposed to turn over and didn't, and it's still worth money. And I don't know if he knew Yolo was it. I guess he kind of did and was going to, you know, why else would you want to shoot a baby necessarily on the ship? So it's like, well, you know, he probably also knows this bounty is wanted dead. Seems like mostly, although there is some, but it seems like dead is the preferable bringing him in. So it's like, well, let's just go ahead and shoot him. And like you've said, it's a little extra money we can probably get out of this job.
Also, this has nothing to do with anything, probably, but I want you guys to know that I just realized who Zero reminds me of, and it's AP5. Like, AP5 doesn't look like a bug the way Zero does, but the whole time I was just like, I feel like there's a droid that you remind me of, and it's AP5.
It sounds like Taika Waititi was doing that droid voice as well, but I don't know, you know, a little bit differently than he did IG-11.
Zero is played by a, I don't know how to say his last name, Richard Ayode?
Okay, I was wrong.
But, I mean, this guy is super famous, it looks like. I recognize his face. I don't know anything he's in, but he's a famous guy. Yeah, I'm sure people listening.
I'll have to look it up. His name, but it was similar sounding to Taika Waititi, so I just thought, oh, well, he's just going to do all the android voices in slightly different ways.
Well, I want more Taikan things, so I will take it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So back to the show. Zero opens the door for the crew, and that's where we see the only human who's not supposed to be on the ship, and it's Matt Lantern as a New Republic soldier named Davin. Which I thought was one of those, I don't know if it's like considered a trope or anything, but I was like, of course, there's like the one thing that like no one accounted for, and it's this human.
Right.
I also appreciated the different things about his outfit. And then at one point they call him, I think like bullhead or something. And they talk about his belt. And I was like, this is funny. I love this.
Yeah.
And so
and his shoes.
Oh yeah. His shoes.
Yeah. Your shoes match your belt. Like, I love it.
Which my, like, I was always taught, you know, your shoes, your belt, your purse, they match. <in your
coat. laughs> And it was such 1970s like loafers and thick belt, like, you know, with Star Wars. It was like something I might have worn to church in 1976.
And while there, they locate their prisoner. But Davin has a tracking beacon, and it will lead a New Republic attack team right to them. And so they engage in this standoff where the Mandalorian is trying to negotiate. And this is where we get to this moment where he's like, you can live. And then Mayfeld's like, no, we can't. And they're just like,
yeah,
pointing all of their blasters and stuff at one another. And then Shion comes in with her knife things, and she incapacitates him. And she's like, you guys, why are you like this?
Why are you the way that you are? I know Carl wasn't crazy about that scene. I always like those. Some of them can add a little bit of comic relief for me. And I'm a fan of The Office, and there was an episode in particular where they did something like this, and it lasted until the end of the show, and that's how it went out. It was so funny. And that's immediately what I thought about with this scene. Only it was a slightly more serious in Star Wars, but I'm a Bill Burr fan. Like, I loved him in his, you know, later scenes in Breaking Bad. I have listened to his podcast over the years. It's been a long time since I've dived into that, but he's a funny comedian. I like just how real he is when he talks about going into projects, and he has been hinting about this huge project on the horizon. So when he turned up as Mayfield, I kind of screamed. And so his comedy in that moment really came through. So that's why I think I really appreciated that scene more than Carl did.
Also, I just want to say, I've never seen The Office before, but you saying that immediately brought back like the GIFs and the photos I've seen too.
Yes!
Because I've seen that and I'm just like, what is happening in this episode? Oh,
it's so funny. They're playing a game. It's like the worst game in the world, but they just can't leave. So they're all stuck in this like duel, holding fake guns, like fingers at each other. It's pretty funny.
That is wild.
Sorry for the tangent.
No, it's okay. We do that all the time.
So this tracking beacon has been activated and Zero lets them know that they only have 20 minutes, but then Jian's like, they only need 5. And I meant to go back and watch this to see if an actual 20 minutes went by, but
I thought of that.
The same thought.
I think it did.
Because it's like, they were not in a hurry. It's like, well, we're going to go back and get him. And then they get all the way to the end with Mayfield, and Quinn's like, no, go on. If you do it, I'll triple it. And he's like, okay. It's like, you better be good for it. It's like, no, you're about to get busted. Let's get out of here. So they were very nonchalant about that.
They were. And then Berg takes out 2 more droids, and these like weird giant droids that I've never seen before. So I was like, oh, that's dope. and they continue down the halls, and eventually we meet Quinn, who is the prisoner, and he remarks that the man who left him behind is now like the person who's come back for him, his savior. And I'm just like, pause. I want to know that story. What happened? Yeah. You were so... And okay, so actually, my brain is just now connecting more changes in The Mandalorian. At one point, I'm assuming for a bounty or for money or something, he was willing to leave a person behind, but he couldn't with YOLO. And so I'm just like, we learn more without learning anything. Mm-hmm. And then this caught me off guard, even though there was no redeeming qualities about this crew and I knew they were bad guys. I wasn't expecting them to push the Mandalorian into the cell and take off. And I was just like, why would you do that to him? And I honestly did not understand how he was going to get out of that. Carl,
yes.
How'd you feel about that?
Yeah, I still was a little surprised.
See, I must have trust issues because their plotting was the least subtle thing I've ever seen. And I, like, they're on the ship and, you know, Xian is just like, to Burr, or to Mayfield, and Berg is watching while Mandalorian's kneeling down and cracking the hatch. And I was just like, oh, they're gonna, something's gonna happen to him. And I'm gonna be mad. I'm already mad because I don't like the way that they feel. So as soon as that comment happened and I saw the placement of the Mandalorian up front, I was like, he's getting kicked in. And Andrew watched it with me and it happened. He's like, damn. He's like, who hurt you, babe? Who hurt you? And I was just like, I have trust issues. So yeah, I was surprised that that was ultimately their double cross, but I wasn't at the same time because I felt like it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I want you to know, I think I've mentioned this before, but I'm still the same person who didn't know anyone. Like, I thought everyone was going to live at the end of Rogue One. So I was just like, when they started going off, I was like, wait, what's happening? What movie is this? So I secretly think that everyone's going to be okay. But also I have, this is another tangent, I'm so sorry. I also have this thing where any like media, book, movie thing I watch, I end up loving the main character. And except for Game of Thrones, except that was redeemed, my main characters are normally okay. So I'm never used to like anyone I love truly being like double crossed, like for real or hurt. So I was just like, what's happening? So here I have written in my notes that Zero sees, so I'm assuming this is the second time Zero sees the message from Grief, and I'm just like, things are a brewing, there are plans and shenanigans afoot. The Mandalorian, because he's super resourceful, escapes. He uses like his grappling hook thing and he like brings a droid like against the like prison door, and they're fighting for a second, and a blaster goes off and he like severs its arm and he uses it to escape. And I want to stop here because one thing I really appreciate about the Mandalorian and how they created his character is he's super resourceful. Obviously he can survive, but he can also get beaten up, and he can also not realize that people are going to double cross him. And I really appreciate that in a character. Like, everything about him is super believable, and I really like that.
Yeah. I like how he is, I like how he's slow and calculating, but clever and calm about things 90% of the time. I mean, I would have stood in that prison cell and just fell to the ground and wept.
Same.
And he was just like, no, let me just gather how we're going to get out of here. And then made it happen. That is one of my favorite things about him.
You saying that reminds me, anytime that I'm with my friends or my family and like something like that happens, or like, oh, Gina, what would you do if the purge is real or something? My go-to answer is just like, I would just lay down and die. I can't do anything. So essentially, I'm the IG droid from the first episode that was always trying to self-destruct. I've just been like, okay, that's it. I'm gone.
It's time. The end is here.
I guess this is it. I die in a New Republic prison ship.
You're P5 loading me singing a song.
Yes!
Aww, that makes me so sad.
It is me. You guys don't.
I'll rescue you.
Thank you. I'm like, don't bring me along on the heist or the robbery, because I'm.
Oh, it's good.
He escapes, and this is the moment where I'm just like, yes, because the lights go out. He like gets to the whatever panel that is. He knows how the buttons work. I wouldn't know how the buttons work. The lights go out, like the emergency red lights come on, doors shut. It feels like a horror film.
So good. And the music.
Yes.
The music this episode with like the pinprick violin type sound. I was like, you're killing me. This is so good.
I actually I watched this on Friday, and 2 days before that, I actually fell asleep and woke up to Glass, and I was like, oh my goodness, this feels like in Glass. So yeah, I feel that completely. And then the other thing I like is the horror movie trope of the split up. And yes. Because of the way the doors fall, it's Quinn and Mayfeld and Shion and Berg. And actually, since I just watched it, that reminds me of when they're in Nebel and they get separated. And that's amazing. Anyway. And also, he shuts off their comms. So no one can get to Zero. Zero can't tell them where the Mandalorian is. And he can't help them navigate. And 20 minutes is still ticking, even though I don't think that it's at, like, it's been 20 minutes. And here I also really appreciate how, so we have like the cat and mouse game that's going on the New Republic ship with the Mandalorian and this crew, but also we have it between Zero and Yolo, because like he is like starts going after him and he's like, where are you? And you get like Yolo's little head like poking around places, and it's just
I can't do
so
it.
So adorable.
Oh, I saved every gif.
And so the crew is like, kill the Mandalorian and escape. And I'm like, you don't have time to kill him. Just escape. 20 minutes. Remember. And Quinn doesn't care if they leave his sister behind. And I'm just like, what is this family?
Yeah. I mean, no honor amongst thieves.
Not at all. Yeah. I guess that's me being too trusting again, because I'm just like, oh.
We'll go to space together, Gina. I'll protect you.
Thank you. Obviously, I am not going to survive if these were real life scenarios. I'd just be like, yes, I will trust you. The Mandalorian picks up the tracking beacon that Davin dropped. Does Davin make it off this ship? Or what happens to... Do we ever see him again?
I thought he was killed by her knife.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Oh.
The blue light knife.
So the end to me, there's a pilot on there, and one thing is like, if you look too closely at stuff, you're kind of like, well, why didn't, so it's kind of like, why aren't they traveling through hyperspace? Are they actually going somewhere, I'm assuming, like transport, or is it just that's what the prison is, it's just flying around, so they hard to find or catch or help prisoners escape? But anyway, it seems like, well, if they've killed all the droids and the pilot's dead, even though they're in a cell, he didn't kill them. Are they going to get anywhere and be found and fed, or are they just sort of stuck in this space aimlessly?
I thought that too.
That's a really good point. I was like, the pilot is here for story purposes of showing humanity of the Mandalorian, and that is it. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that, actually. Gave us a cute little cameo from Anakin Skywalker. Mandalorian fights Berg first, and he tries to choke him from the top of the great thing, and I'm like, ooh, babe, this man, he weighs too much for all that. Yeah. And so they fight, and Mando gets thrown around the room, and at one point...
Mm-hmm. That was also Clancy Brown, who, you know, you talked about IMDb people. I didn't recognize really most anybody else, but I recognized Clancy Brown. One, his voice is, you know, he's got a distinct voice, which I think he's the best Lex Luthor. He's in Lex Luthor in the animated series, which I think he does a great voice for that. But if you go back to the first time I saw him, it was in Highlander. So he was one of the immortals in Highlander. So you would have to take his head off, I guess, to actually kill him. So I guess that's why you would put a wire on his neck, hoping to snap his neck off, since, you know, evidently the Mandalorian had seen Highlander and knew how to take care of Clancy Brown.
That is so funny because I didn't know who that was.
Yeah.
And speaking of Smallville, when you were like, he's the best Lex Luthor, I was like, that Michael Rosenbaum guy?
Rosenbaum?
Because that, I don't know. I guess I think of him. He's like my first thought for Lex Luthor. And so I was like, no, that can't be
anime.
Him. And you're like, anime. And I was like, oh, okay. That was not him. Can I take a real quick side pause? Eve, have you been watching that Crisis on Earth, I think, X crossover?
Oh, the Infinite Earths.
Yeah, that thing.
I have not, but I've been like, they're downloading, so I can, because I know Tom Welling and Erica Durant were just on.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I've watched it. Oh, I get left out, but I watched it.
No. Do you like them? No. Is it good? Do you like them?
For what the CW is able to do, I mean, it's definitely not like movie quality type stories. But, you know, I've enjoyed it for what it is, and it's been fun to see, you know, all the little... I did have enjoyed the cameos of those sort of things, seeing Brandon Routh back in the Superman suit when he's actually plays a different character on that whole thing.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait.
Playing, I don't know if they put some stuff in there to make him look more out of shape, but he's not in the shape he was when he played Superman in Superman Returns. But I also think he's supposed to be sort of a disgruntled, older, not caring Superman too, so I think they probably have made him look like he doesn't fit the suit as well, but he still looks strong and good in it. So it's but I have enjoyed a lot of the little cameos, especially when they had a guy from actual Batman with Michael Keaton. They didn't have Michael Keaton, but they had one of the guy that played a reporter in that, and they had Conroy, the guy Kevin Conroy, who actually does his Batman voice. He shows up as an old man, and he doesn't look intimidating like other Batman, but you think, well, this is a broken older version, so he doesn't get a shape. I love Batman the animated series and Kevin Conroy. So those little things, I've really enjoyed that for that this little mini series they have going on.
Yeah, Batwoman, I tried and stopped watching every single one of those shows. So I was just like, I vaguely know who everyone is, and I'm just like, oh, when people I know like are into certain things, I'm just like, oh, did you see this? I don't know what they're talking about, but I know you like this.
Yeah, I'll just watch the ones with my faves and then peace out.
It's gone downhill. Legends of Tomorrow kind of never really built a big steam, but I will have to say, decided we can't be real serious like Arrow tries to be and Flash tries to be, and so they just decided to go goofy, and it actually worked. You just look at it as camp instead of like going to be a serious hero show, and to me it's had some of the funnier moments. There's a kind of an analog if you think of the original Ghostbusters and you remember the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Like, they had something like that at the end of the first season, I want to say, or second season. They had to fight a villain who was basically like a big Elmo or something, and he had in the shape of a toy that was a Christmas sale toy but turned into a giant version of it. And that, to me, was like, okay, they decided to go camp. And I'm going to watch it. I actually enjoyed that show because of that. But if you think it's silly and kind of ridiculous and not good, I could see we would see that as well.
I like when shows lean in like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They definitely
would. Yeah.
And here's where I say, I've never seen any Ghostbuster movie. And and then we take a break from our DC podcast show and go back to The Mandalorian.
Last week was Rocky, and this week is Ghostbusters. You're killing me.
Well, I want to see the new one, so I guess I'll watch the old one. I will watch more pop culture moments so I can be Tom Holland. Shion hears the Mandalorian and Berg fighting, and she like goes after them, but then he uses a door to crush, like multiple doors to crush Berg, which reminds me of Return of the Jedi. I don't know the name of that creature or whatever, but that's how Luke kills him. And at this point I thought that
you're welcome.
At this point,
in episode one of Mando, he likes his doors.
That is true. Yeah. But because of that, and because we've been talking about how he used to be, I was just like, is he dead? Can you survive that? And so the end that you had already mentioned, Eve, I was just like, oh, I like that. He has changed. Mm-hmm. Didn't kill them. droid guards are also roaming around this new Republic ship, and the Mandalorian and Shion fight. And I say it looks like he stabs her with one of the knife thingies, because I wrote these on my second time watching and I knew that she had lived.
And then the Mandalorian next sneaks up on Mayfeld. And this is the blink. I love the blinking lights. And he's like, he's not there. He's there. I was just like, yes, everything about this. Love. But also, I really like that Mayfeld is like, I guess his backpack has a gun thing. And I don't know why that little detail just made me really happy, but it did. And I would like said backpack.
Yes.
And, oh, the other thing that I said was, is that Mayfeld at one point, like, a mouse droid goes by, and I called it a jump scare, because, like, is that him? Oh, no, it's just a droid. But then he shows up, and then he gets him, and I'm just like, oh, all the horror. So we get back to the Razor Crest, and there's, like, this door opens, and Zero's just like, what was that? Who was that? But then we go back to Quinn and the Mandalorian, and they kind of have a standoff. And Quinn's like, you killed the others. And the Mandalorian's like, they got what they deserved. Mm-hmm. And Quinn points out that if he dies, the Mandalorian doesn't get his money. Starting with you, Eve, first time watching, so I know we've talked a little about whether we thought he like actually killed them or whatnot. But what did you think the next move he was going to make was? What would you say was going through the Mandalorian's head?
First initial thought was, I don't think he's going to take him because of Baby Yoda. But then I remembered immediately that he was staring at the Republic alarm beacon thing. They emphasize that scene where he's holding it up and just kind of looking at it. And then they cut and a bunch of other stuff happens. And then that scene with Quinn. And I'm like, I think he's going to do some sabotage that benefits him so he still gets paid. But ultimately, you know, doesn't bring hellfire down on him, but the bad guys. So I'm not saying I knew where everything was going to go. I didn't. But this episode was a little bit more predictable for me towards the end, and that I was still happy with it, for the record.
Carl, did you have similar thoughts about where it was going to go? Or did you think something different?
When they cut and didn't show us what he did, I knew that it was like it would maybe make us think he killed him, but he didn't. I had no idea about the sabotage, about how the beacon, I had totally forgotten about already. So when they pulled it out later, I was like, oh yeah, that thing. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even think about that. I just knew he was going to do that, get him back, get his money. And then I didn't know what would happen when he turned him in. I did think there might be some kind of sabotage there as far as what Rand may try to do to him and how he would get out of it. I wouldn't know, but I didn't expect the beacon.
I really thought he was going to kill him. I don't know. I was like, forget the money. Forget the beacon. I didn't think about any of that. I was like, oh, this man's dead. And then we go to a scene where Zero finds Yolo. And he, like, raises his blaster to shoot. And once again, my heart is in my throat. And for a second, I was like, is Yolo about to use the Force? And then we see it's the Mandalorian right behind him. And I'm like, oh, look at this double tag team, father-son duo.
My heart.
I know, they just have my whole heart. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Which is a conversation I had with my dad, and I tweeted about it like back when I was still on Twitter. And at one point I'm just talking to my dad and I go, I don't even know who I was talking about, and I just go, so and so has my whole heart. And he just stops and he stops and he looks at me, he goes, a lot of men have your whole heart. And I was like, this is true, but you didn't have to say it. But once again, my father has been proven true, because Yolo and the Mandalorian just have my whole heart. Oh. So the Mandalorian takes off in the Razor Crest, and he meets back up with Ran, and Ran's like, where are the others? And the Mandalorian's like, yo, I thought the policy was no questions asked. And he's like, you know what? You right. You did the job. You get paid. So as soon as the Mandalorian leaves, he gets his paycheck, and then he leaves, and then Ran's like, kill him. And I'm just like, why? I mean, I get that Ran is not like a good person, and I get that they're like not like friends, they use each other, but I'm still just like, why would you kill him? And so but that's when Quinn notices the tracking beacon on him, and they're just like, what is happening? And Ran is just gone. Ran is me in any scenario where anything fishy happens. I'm just like, and I'm gone.
just disappear. Where's Gina?
That's actually a thing in my family. Like, whenever everyone starts acting weird, everyone's just like, Gina went low. She's not there anymore. I'm the person at the beginning of the horror movie whose stuff starts getting weird. You don't see me for the rest of the movie. I'm there at the very end. And I'm just like, I survived.
You survived because you're like, I'm going to go to that gas station 5 miles up the road.
So the X-Wings show up and we get special surprises as our X-Wing pilots.
Yes.
Eve, do you want to talk about who our pilots are?
Yes. Okay. So I feel terrible because it was not in the order. I didn't recognize them in the order that they appeared. Mm-hmm. I saw Dave Filoni and I was like, wait, back it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was Dave first? I thought he was second.
No.
Okay, so it was Dave and then Deborah Chow? Or was it Rick?
Dave and Rick, Dave again. And then Rick again, and I think Deborah last.
Okay, so I totally botched this. But, so yes, Dave Filoni, Deborah Chow, and Rick Fumaya. Oh, I'm sorry. Famuyiwa. I'm sorry. I had to practice and I totally botched that. I apologize. But those three, he directed the episode. Dave has written and directed episodes. Deborah has directed episodes. I was just like, I flippin' love this, that they are doing what they are doing on this show. And I paused it and I was like, those people, Andrew, are creators. Look at them. And then we watched, you know, the last bit of the show. But I thank you, Mandalorian.
And I only recognized Dave first, and I didn't recognize him and Deborah, but I knew they didn't look like necessarily who you get from central casting to do the pilots, and so I decided something about, because they looked older than, you kind of think about like Ezra and stuff, you think maybe younger pilots, and they all looked about Dave's age, and so it was just sort of funny, so I looked it up to see who they were, and then when I saw their names, I was like, oh, that is great, I love it too, but I wouldn't have probably done that had I not recognize Dave. And the way Dave delivered that line too, it's just like, it's like almost like he didn't care, like he's got more energy. If you ever see him at panel, he's great at panels. If you're not into the animation or whatever he's talking about at the time, he's great at panels. He really is good.
Yeah.
And he's got this sinister grin all the time because he's kind of, under him as far as like what they say, what they can't say, and they're all scared of him. It's all a joke. It's funny how they can't give away to that thing. It's like, that's clearly a beacon there. Looks like they're a gunship after us. It's like the most I'm just going to do the line and get out of here. But it was it funny. I loved it.
It's a little cheese ball acting, but it works.
So obviously I recognize Dave, but I'm actually really surprised. I was like, is that Rick? Is that Deborah? But I've also been looking at their faces like a lot more recently. Internet Movie Database, no one will be surprised by Dave Filoni. His character is Trapper Wolf. Because wolves have to be there.
Amazing. I just live.
And Rick is Jib Dodger. And then Deborah is Sash Ketter. And so I love that they're there.
It's so good.
I'm always a big fan of like creators and stuff having little cameos in their thing. I think I probably became a fan with that with Stan Lee and things. I'm just like, oh, that's very cute. I love that.
Yeah, Stan Lee and M. Night Shyamalan for me.
Mm-hmm.
Which because you always look for it.
Mm-hmm,
as soon as those, you're like, where is he at? Where is he going to pop up? And it's like a little game inside of a movie. I enjoy that.
And so the X-Wing pilots. So I'm going to be honest. So like when I saw whatever place that Ran and his like crew was on, my first thought was like, oh, that kind of reminds me of the Colossus because it's just like a floating spaceship. Was that just like a floating spaceship? So they just blow up floating spaceship.
Yep.
And then I love that the Mandalorian gives Yolo the little ball on the controller because I'm just like, look at that cute little callback. And he's like, I told you that was a bad idea. And I'm just like, what? Which part of that was a lot of that was a bad idea? What part of it was a bad idea?
Although, can we make note that, and Gina, this might burst your heart if you haven't thought about it, that the Mandalorian made Baby Yoda a car seat?
No. I did. Oh my.
Did you see? It's like a little, piece of metal that he took from something else, and it has blankets in it. I live. I'm going to send you the gifts as soon as we're done recording.
Okay. Listeners.
It's like a car ship seat.
This isn't
This is an unmistakably Star Wars breaking news. This is Jenna when she reacts at things. Oh my God. I'm a little emotional now. I'm kind of crying right now. Okay.
I am too.
If my parents listen to this, they're just going to be like, Gina, really? And I'll be like, yes.
Oh my God.
And so after this, we see that the Mandalorian didn't actually kill the crew. He just imprisoned them in the ship. And he's a good guy. And we love him. And that is the end of this episode, which does follow the procedural format that we talked about earlier. But, and so I know that the author of that was just like, is this episode going to let it work for me? And I feel like the author, oh, I'm sorry. I see the car seat. I see.
I texted Gina. I couldn't wait.
I just like completely lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. This is perfect. Oh, my sweet. Okay, I have to click off of this so I can focus. I'm going to stare. I promise you, I'm going to stare at this for like a solid like 20 minutes afterwards. I don't even know what I was saying. It's the end of the episode. It was a good episode. Oh, the procedurals.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be interested in going back to see if the author liked this episode. I feel like it gave us enough nuggets and things, especially with Grief's message that we were kind of getting pieces of and us finding out about who the Mandalorian was. I feel like we're getting pieces to the ultimate story, especially because we only have two episodes left. So I think that author would have liked it. Did you guys like it? Do you think the author would like it?
I liked it a lot.
I liked it.
No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I don't necessarily know if it would change the opinion of the author. And I'm going to be mean. I don't know if I care.
I mean, yeah, that's valid. That's true.
But I think it was, it didn't feel like a filler episode. It didn't give too much of a storyline, but it gave just enough of this is the world that we're living in this week and little snippets and breadcrumbs of what's to come and what's been. Yeah. And I think that's right.
I agree. I think he still's going to see it as filler and he's happy. It is the same formula, but I think he'll still have the opinion of it's executed well, but a different type of show. And that's basically what it went down to.
All right. Well, just like the author did, though, we are going to look ahead. So as I've mentioned a couple times, there are only two episodes left. This next episode is actually coming out, I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday, which I'll say the actual date later because it's written later in the show notes. But Tross is this week. So this is the last time effectively we're going to say anything about Dust is Try to tie to The Rise of Skywalker, because next time we have an episode, we're going to be like, did you say anything that ties to The Rise of Skywalker?
Oh, that sounds awesome. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice for that question to change. It is coming to an end, you guys. So I'll start with you, Carl. Any thoughts about where the season one is going?
What's it going? I think we've got episodes left. Those episodes will sort of be more like a two-parter or connected a lot of episodes were. And it will be someone, and I guess we're down to what's Giancarlo's character's, Esposito, what's his character's name again? Moff.
Isn't he? Yeah. I just know he's a Moff.
Yeah, people are shouting at the pod right now. I know it. I can look it up, but he'll come into the picture, get the Mando corner, probably take Yolo away from the Mando, and do a soliloquy, about what his master plan is and was, and then Yolo, will have to be saved. We're probably going to bring Cara Dune back. Probably not Fennec Shand, unfortunately, but Cara Dune will help him in that. That will be to a point where he is beaten and looks like it's no hope, and at that point, the Mando will use the Force somehow to snatch something out of Esposito's hands and save Yolo and destroy the enemy, and then that's how the season will end.
How do you follow that up, Eve?
I don't necessarily. I'm not 100% sure about the Force sensitive Mando part. It would be. It would be super rad to see. I'm not going to say that I'd be like, no. I would definitely love it. I see it more in the direction of a serious cliffhanger. And some, like, he, every every episode he has managed to get out of a scrap or, you know, outsmart and outthink every bad guy that he's come up against. And I wouldn't be surprised if the end of season one ends with that not happening. And, you know, his helmet being removed and Baby Yoda being taken away somewhere else, not necessarily, you know, to be hurt. I know that this is the prestige type show. And again, I have to keep reminding myself it's Disney, but I wouldn't be surprised if that abrupt sort of shift happens for the end of season one.
Mm-hmm. I think that obviously he's not on good terms with the guild right now, and I don't think that's ever going to properly be restored. I think the helmet's mm-hmm. coming off, and so he's mm-hmm. not going to be able to use the other Mandalorians as a resource, and something's going to happen with YOLO. And so because the helmet's off and because he's not like on terms with the guild, he is going to be completely alone, and he's going to be on his way to get YOLO back. And I feel, mm-hmm. and as long as when the helmet comes off, I don't see like a heartbroken face, I'll be good. So, and I think that things like that will probably happen in the last episode. So Taika, do not break my heart.
Yeah.
Because Taika Waititi listens to Unmistakably Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Taika, here this Thursday night, they're going to shoot the whole episode, and it's going to be released by midnight into Friday morning. Well, actually, we only have till Wednesday. That's right. You said that. So.
Dang it, Carl, with your practicality.
Oh, and that one alien, what's her name? Gina, she's gonna marry the Mandalorian.
Gina. I actually wrote it down. I wrote G-I apostrophe N-A-H.
That's how I spelled it in my head.
Oh my god. I'm going to write a fanfic and you are going to be in that story,
yes,
girl.
Yes, please. Thank you. I will give it all the kudos on AO3.
Love.
I just finished actually like a day ago listening to Unmistakably Star Wars, like the main show's most recent episode. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. in the same vein as that, now we are going to wrap it up.
My jetpack is ready in case I need to take a flight. Got my trusty blasters and I'm itching to start a fight. If my bounty escapes, then I guess I just won't get paid. These are the days when a honest fortune can be made. It's just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prayer's gonna run day. Just another Mando fun day. Ahead of IG-88, I got to make the bounty all mine. Other hunters want it, they're all trying to cut in line. It takes so long, cause RSing doesn't fight fair. Outdueled Cad Bane, but Bossk is already there. It's just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prey is gonna run day. It's just another Mando fun day.
So here are our closing thoughts. Don't forget that the next episode airs on Disney Plus Wednesday, December 18th, and it's a day before The Rise of Skywalker. I know that we are talking The Rise of Skywalker later, but I'm curious, when are you guys seeing it? And then that's all we'll say for now.
Go ahead, Eve.
I'm seeing it Thursday at 6, and then Friday at 11:30 a.m. and 4:20 p.m.
I am seeing it Thursday, I think 5:30. Look at my tickets.
I am also going Thursday, but my theater's first showing is at 6:30, so I'm behind everyone. But I also bought another ticket for 10, and so as soon as it's done,
yes,
I'm going to buy an IC and go see it again.
Yeah.
Love.
Love it.
Let me tell you, I'm like introverted, and I don't really like to like cause like a fuss with people, but I care so much about movies that before the whole reserve seat thing was like a thing, like there's five of us in my family, and so we'd get our tickets, and then someone we'd like have like three people know all the snack orders. Everyone would like hand me their coats. I would like go in the theater. I put coats on all our seats, and then I would, because I'm like 5'8 and a half, I would like stretch out on all of our seats, and people would come in, just look at me, and I'd be like, "Yeah, there are five people in my family. We want these
keep
seats.
Walking."
Keep and walking. So the reserve seating, I guess, is really really nice. I like having the heated and the reclining seats and all that, but I kind of low key miss like being the person that was like, "Keep walking. It's my family's seat."
Yes. Yes. A little cutthroat. You missed the cutthroat movie theater game. Yeah.
Oh, see, I could hang out with like that crew in The Mandalorian. I could be cutthroat when I need to be.
Oh, love it.
And so don't forget to listen to Unmistakably Star Wars' this main show, which is in the same feed. YouTube channel, great videos come out. Check out the website for different articles. Follow Unmistakably Star Wars on Twitter at UnmistakablySW. Eve, where can the good people find you on Twitter?
I am still happily haunting my at @Skywalker_Eve. So follow me.
Do you think that Tross will make you change your at? Or
it might.
Oh,
it might. I've been toying with it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. We'll see. It's the rise. I mean, the rise of Skywalker_Eve. Maybe. I don't know.
And then, Carl, where can the good people find you?
Find me at Hassler Carl and on Twitter. And if you want to DM me questions, I'm going to take them as well.
And then everyone can find me at @GinaSanders_. And I just want to say thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll see you all next time.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at WeAreEscapePods.com and on Twitter at @WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Promoting positivity in fandom.
This party's over.